was growing up, I always wanted to be an important person. And I thought maybe someday I'll become a chairman of a big company. And I became a chairman, but not the kind of chairman I had in mind.
This is Jamuna Prasadji.
Does anybody miss the sound of auto rickshaws and speakers? This is a little bit of an intimate group today. And today I feel relaxed because I don't have to. If I don't finish in an hour, then I'm not going to get in trouble. So I'd like to start with telling you a little personal something. I don't usually tell the boys, but I want to pass around some Mahaprasad for everybody. About, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, we were getting ready to go to Russia and Europe to give some classes, do some katha. And I told Krishna Kund that we have to go to Vrindavan first. We have to get blessings, permission. So we left, we were flying out that night, we came that day to Vrindavan. And we came and we met some friends and they wanted to talk and they wanted to talk more. And we were going to go to Radha Damodar temple. But by the time we finished with them, it was after 11:30. It means by the time we get there, there would be no darshan. So she said, why we go? I said, no, we should go. We'll go to Rupa Goswami's samadhi or something. We want some blessing before we go. So we went. And we got there about 12:20, and we came and we were very, very touched and very happy to see the deity doors were open. Usually they're closed. And so we went and we're standing in front of Radha Damodar, and there's so many different deities there, Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Vrindavanishri, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. And suddenly the pujari, without anybody saying anything, he went over to the deity of Radha Rani, who was worshipped by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. And he took the garland off of her and he gave it to me, put it around my neck. And I said, oh, see, this is our blessing. So that garland's inside this little bag. And you can touch it to your head and smell it. But you have to return it to me, please. Yeah. Gopala gada rati dam yati singha gora Govinda deshika varam satatam namami Uttama adama kichuna bachila jachiya dileka kola Kahe premananda emona goranga ridoya dhariya bola Vajra goranga kaha goranga laha borangera namare bolo Vajra goranga gorangera namare Che jana goranga bhaje se hoy amara prana re Che jana goranga bhaje se hoy amara prana re Che jana goranga bhaje se hoy amara prana re Say, right, I'm out of pride.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Premabhidana parama pumarta tasmai jagan mangala mangalaya Chaitanya Chandraya namo namaste Chaitanya Chandraya namo namaste Madgavirapi gopala Sri kriyat kripaya jodi Tadaiva sambhaya pitva Rishi yustad kriya janaha Sri Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Sasanatana rupaka Gopala Raghunath apta Brajabala vapahima Vanchakalpa turubhyascha Kripa sindubhya evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasai Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Namo Vrindavanam Gaya Tubhyam Bulo Kamolane Purna Brahmata Patraya Namo Govardhanaya Cha Namo Govardhanaya Cha Namaste Girirajaya Sri Govardhana Namane Asesha Klesha Nasaya Aramananda Dayane. So this place is known as Bichua. Sometimes they say Bilchu, sometimes they say Bilachu, Bichua Kund. And there's a forest surrounding it. That forest is uppercut right now. For the most part, we can't see it. And that forest is called Vilasvan. Vilas means a place, pastimes. Van means a forest. So it's said that Sri Sri Radha and Krishna used to come to this Bichua Kund regularly, and previously there was a stone on the southern side of the Kund that Radha and Krishna would sit on together, and they would have very sweet conversations. Maybe even now they're sitting there and having some conversations also. So the word Bichu means a toe ring. And it's said that Srimati Radharani, once she was at this place and Krishna came, and he saw that Radha was searching and searching. And Krishna said, "Hey, Priya, oh Radha, what are you looking for?" And Radhika, she said, "I lost my toe ring." And Krishna started making some jokes with her. "Oh, because you stole my flute. And now this is your karmic reaction. God is punishing you." And Radharani, she said, "Leave me alone. I have to find my toe ring." But Krishna kept making jokes. And finally, Radharani became very annoyed. So then Krishna stopped making jokes with her. And to pacify her, Krishna started digging in the earth here at this place with his bare hands. And then Radharani saw when Krishna dug, all of a sudden there were so many toe rings. There were golden toe rings. There were toe rings made out of silver. There were toe rings made out of different types of jewels. And Krishna said, "Hey, Priya, which one is yours?" And Radha and Krishna became so very happy. Then in great happiness, they embraced each other at that time. So this for me is a little bit of a mystical place. I'll tell you why. This is the second time I've been here. It's not like I've been to this place many, many times. They asked me if I'd like to take the devotees to some place, and I always like to do that because it means that I can do longer kirtan and a longer mangalacharna, and I can speak for more than an hour. I remember there was one famous rock and roll star or something in America when they changed the speed limit from 90 miles an hour to 55. He said, I can't drive 55. So I also can't hardly speak in 55 minutes. It's very hard for me. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So I somehow just kind of randomly, out of one book on Govardhan, we picked out this place. I'd never been here. I thought, oh, it sounds nice. It doesn't sound very well known. It'd be interesting for the devotees. And I requested some friends to come here and tell me what it was like. And they came. They said, oh, it's very quiet, very, very good. You'll like very much. And then I got a chance to come a few days ago, and we spoke with Jamuna Prasad Ji, the pujari here. I had darshan and saw everything's good. And then I was thinking, because we've been very busy, I haven't been going to programs because they've chained me to my desk in my room. We're trying to finish the layout and the proofreading and everything for our magazine on Govardhan. So that even if it's not ready for the last day of this retreat, which we would like, but at least it'll be ready one or two days after that. So some of the devotees hopefully won't curse us who've been asking for it. So I was thinking, I didn't get a chance to really prepare anything here. I was thinking, what should I speak about? And last night, I still hadn't really decided. I thought, oh, there's a nice story we're printing in our magazine that probably many of the devotees don't know. It's called Keshavacharya and Lord Haridev. This story, I'd like to tell you something a little about literature. It's good to know something about literature. This is from a book called Bhaktamala. A Bhaktamala is kind of a genus or a category of books. There are many different versions of Bhaktamala, and they're books usually which speak about different great devotees. But most of the versions of Bhaktamala, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't appreciate, because they're mixed with some Upasiddhanta or some Sahajiism or some Mayavad philosophy. So we don't appreciate. But there's one book which was compiled in Hindi around the year 1666 by the Vaishnav Nabadas. And it was later commented on by a devotee named Priyadas in 1766. And that book was accepted and appreciated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. It was quoted by him in some of his lectures. It was also mentioned by Thakur Bhaktivinod in his autobiography. And moreover, we found in one Bengali copy of Sajjana Toshini that they give a list of recommended books, just like the VIHE, maybe they do that, I don't know, recommended books to read on the subject. And related books to it. So they had some course called the Sampradaya Vallabhacharya, and they had a list of other books which were recommended, and this, we saw this version of Bhaktamala by Nabadas was mentioned there. Not very much is known about Nabadas. Priyadas writes in his commentary that Naba was born in the line of Hanuman. Presumably that means that he was born in a line of devotees of Lord Ramachandra's devotee Hanuman. He says that Naba was born blind, and that due to extreme poverty, they had not enough to feed the family. The mother was forced to do something very terrible. She had to give up her baby. And she put her baby in the forest. This blind baby was laying there, and she left him there when he was 5 years old. He was found by two saints named Sri Kiladev and Sri Agradev. And they saw this 4 or 5 year old boy in the middle of the forest crying. And they sprinkled some sacred water on the boy's eyes. And all of a sudden he got vision. Something like what Darya Dham Prabhu said, they're transcendental doctors. So, Odaryadam Prabhu Ki. So after that, Agrodev, he gave him initiation into a Ram mantra, and he told them that you should stay in Golta. Have any of you been to Golta, near to Jaipur? Raise your hand. If you've been to Jaipur, good chance you went to Golta. Baladi Vidyabhushan wrote his commentary on Vedanta Sutra there, Govinda Bhasha. And also this Bhaktamala was written by Navadas in Golta. They have a kind of a shrine there which marks that. So from the prayers in the beginning of the book, it seems that Priyadas, who's a commentator, he belonged to the Madhvagaudiya Sampradaya. And it also the book speaks about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And it seems that this Priyadas belonged to our line, in the line of Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Srinivas Acharya. So he tells a story, and this is a story that is randomly, I just picked this place randomly, and last night I thought, just randomly I got some inspiration, oh, we should just tell this story. Many devotees probably don't know this story. And I started reading the story, and I realized, oh, this is a story about Bichua Kund. Oh, what a nice coincidence. How we just picked this place, and how this story just came up. So anyway, there was a Brahmin family living near Gwalior, and the parents were named Mohan Mishra and Bhagavati Devi, this couple, and they performed the Payabrata ceremony as described in this Bhagavatam in the 8th canto, and they performed that very strictly with a desire to have a child, and they got a child. So the 24th verse of the 16th chapter of that 8th canto says, Keshava Toshanam, that this vow, the Payabrata vow, brings pleasure to Lord Keshav. So when their son was born, they named him Keshav. And Keshav was educated by his father, and from his very birth he was following Vaishnav Dharma, and he considered Srimad Bhagavatam to be the essence of everything. So seeing that he was very, very interested in bhakti, and he had a proclivity, a nature to be renounced, his parents wanted to get him married. Just the opposite, maybe, in the Hare Krishna movement. But in India, parents, the people have some wisdom. They'd rather encourage their son to get married than to become a renunciate for 10 or 15 years and then later on decide, well, actually, I should get married. Better that you get married first, not that you get married later. So they were encouraging him like that, but he didn't want to marry. And so finally his parents gave him their blessings that you should try to achieve perfection through devotion. So shortly after that, Keshava, known as Keshavacharya, he left home and he was on his way to Vrindavan. And he was very excited, just like all of you. Wherever you're living and you decide, now I'm going to go to Vrindavan for the Govardhan retreat, you feel so excited when you're leaving home. So Keshavacharya was feeling like that, and shortly after he was leaving, he was thinking in his mind, how will I attain the Lord of my life? How will I get Krishna? And then suddenly, just as he was thinking that, he heard an Akashvani, a voice from the sky. And the voice said, go quickly to Vrindavan. Your friend is waiting for you. He must have gone very quickly after hearing that voice. Huh? So when he arrived in Vrindavan, he became so overwhelmed by the devotional atmosphere in Braj. The Keshavacharya, he gave up eating and sleeping, and he was just crying day and night. Where is my Pranabalabha? Where is Krishna? Hey, Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Dina Bando Jagatpate. Gopesha Gopika Kanta. Radha Kanta Namostite. Oh, Krishna, where are you? Where are you? He was crying and crying. My Guru Maharaj, she said once that when you begin crying, then the Sarup Shakti, oh, that was a Neil Gaia, blue deer that just went by, blue cow. You can't see him now. He ran by very quickly. It's very auspicious. So he said that when you begin crying, like that in your heart, then the Swarup Shakti descends to the devotee. You get shelter of Krishna. And Krishna, seeing the distressed condition of his devotee, Keshavacharya, made some arrangement. And he sent his dear devotee, Gyanadev, to come to Keshavacharya and give him initiation. Gyanadev ordered him, you should go and stay Nijanikata Nibasam Dehi Govardhanatvam. You should go and stay near Giridaj Govardhan. Yes, Guru Maharaj. And he said, if you do that, then Lord Haridev will manifest before you and your fame will increase with the fame of Haridev. So after he got this instruction from his Guru Maharaj, Keshavacharya, he never left Govardhan to go anywhere else. And it said that it was here at Govardhan that Lord Haridev began speaking to Keshavacharya. And one day, Haridev told him, hey, I'm living underneath an irrigation canal in a field near the place known as Bichua Kund. So you should go there. You should find me and establish my worship. But Keshavacharya, he said, please forgive me. But how can I do that? It's very nice that you instruct me like that. He said, but Srimati Radharani is not with you. How can I go there? This was also the mood of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he said that even if Krishna personally calls me to come, I won't go there, even if Krishna personally calls me, unless Srimati Radharani is there. And if Srimati Radharani is there, even if no one calls me, I'm going to go running there. This is the nature of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. This was the nature of Keshavacharya. So he said, Prabhu, he told Haridev, how can I go? Srimati Radharani is not with you. I'm a sadhu, I'm a baba, I'm just wholly dedicated to worshiping Radha and Krishna, but you're all by yourself. Krishna said, hey, diddy, calm down. He said, when I lifted Govardhan Hill, all the residents of Braj, they came underneath the hill. And also, Srimati Radharani, she came there at that time, and I held up that hill on the tip of my finger for 7 days and nights in the presence of Srimati Radharani. He said, so don't consider that my form of Haridev is independent of Radha. This form of Haridev is a manifestation of Sri Radha's love and affection. This form is supremely merciful. It's the protector of the surrendered devotees and the fulfiller of all desires. You won't have to beg for anything from anyone, for anything from my worship. When, by my inspiration, someone voluntarily offers something to you without you asking for it, then you should accept it. So Keshavacharya was very inspired by that. This deity of Haridev is very, very special. It's said that once Krishna told the gopis that you should come and meet me at Manasi Ganga. And so the gopis, they went to Manasi Ganga, but Krishna wasn't there. And so the gopis began crying. When we're having problems, we pray to God. Who do the gopis pray to? They pray to Krishna. They call out to Krishna. But at this time, they were calling him, Haridev! Haridev! Oh, Haridev! Haridev! Please come, please come. And the gopis were crying and crying in separation. And at that time, Lord Haridev manifested there before them. It's said that later, Brajanab, Krishna's great-grandson, established that deity of Haridev there in Manasi Ganga. But later, when the Muslims came, he was hidden. And so Keshavacharya, he was here in this place. Lord Haridev told him, you come and rescue me here in this place. I'm under the ground. And so Keshavacharya came here. He called for all the villagers, like Madhavendra Puri did when Gopal came to him in a dream. He said, come, come. Haridev is here. Bring your shovels, sticks. So they began digging. And they discovered, sure enough, there was a deity of Haridev. And everyone became full of ecstasy and so happy. But this is Braj. And in Braj, everyone has great attachment for Krishna. Can you imagine how all those villagers must have felt digging in the ground and finding the deity of Haridev? Each one of them felt, he's my beloved. And so there became a quarrel, a kind of quarrel of love amongst the Brijbasis at that time. He said, come with me. Why will he go with you? You just have a very small house. He'll come to my house. We have a very big house. My wife cooks very good. She'll make very nice. No. So a third person said, no, no, he'll come to my place. And so in this way, everyone was having a big quarrel. Who was going to take him home? And the farmer who was in charge of the field, he spoke up, hey, he was found in my field. I'm going to take him home. Then the zamindar, the landlord who owned the property, he came. He said, no, 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 no. This is my property. I am taking him home. So in this way, everyone wanted to take Haridev with them. But at that time, an Akashvani came, a voice from the sky. And the voice declared, only someone who can pick up the Lord can take him away. Okay? So all the different Brijbasis there, they tried to pick up Lord Haridev, but none of them could pick him up. Even 8, 10, 15, 20 of them were trying to pick him up. They couldn't pick him up. And then Keshavacharya said, let me try. And he came, and it was like Lord Haridev was like a flower. Just picked him up very, very easily. And he brought Haridev back to his cottage and began worshiping him. And then Lord Haridev came in a dream to one king named Bhagavan Das and ordered him, you should build a temple for me. And he also gave five villages. I find it very interesting, like in Jagannath Puri and Orissa, how do they maintain the temple there? Traditionally, Jagannath, he has so much property. And they allow different people to farm from that property, use it in different ways. And whatever income comes from the property, a certain amount goes to the Jagannath Mandir. A very good system. It's difficult to just depend on donations always and whatever. So Haridev was shifted there. On another day, here at Govardhan, the Lord came in a dream to Keshavacharya, and he told him, Keshavacharya, I'm going to give you an order. If I give you an order, are you going to accept it? Keshavacharya said, yes, my Lord. What is it? What's your instruction? He said, nearby, there's a village, and there's a Brahmin living there, and he's a great devotee of Lord Jagannath. And he promised me that he would offer his first child to me. So, by my arrangement, that first child was a girl. And now that girl has grown up, and I have come to him in a dream, and I told him that he should give his daughter to you in marriage. You should get married. So Keshavacharya, it's kind of hard to argue with Krishna. He said, household life is very troublesome. The wife always wants to quarrel. They have so many demands and things. Very, very difficult. But I don't want to disregard your order. Because if I disobey your order, then I'm really going to be caught up with Maya. So your order, actually, is a cause for liberation for me. So then on the order of the Lord, Keshavacharya got married. He had two sons named Sri Parshuram and Sri Balamukunda. And he turned over his serving the Lord, Haridev, to his two sons. And then Keshavacharya later in life lived as a Paramahansa, and every day he was circumambulating Govardhan Hill and crying and exhibiting different symptoms of Prem Bhakti. So I was trying to think what to speak about here. This is our second topic we just finished, right? The first topic was about the toe ring. This is the second topic. Now there's a third topic. I was trying to think, what is an appropriate thing to speak of Bhikshu Kund? And then I thought, oh, this is the place of the toe ring. And why is it very important for ladies in Braj, ladies in Vedic culture, why are their toe rings so important? Because that's their wedding ring. That's the thing they identify with themselves for being married. Srila Prabhupada, he speaks about this. There's one room conversation in 1969. Prabhupada said, the love between Radha and Krishna is called parakya. They're not married, husband and wife. Radharani seems to be the wife of some other gentleman. But from childhood, Radha and Krishna were friends, Prabhupada saying. So Radharani couldn't forget Krishna. She used to come to Krishna and stand there. And Krishna was playing. Prabhupada said, Kishore, Kishori. They were boy and girl. But there's no inebriety. There's nothing wrong. Just like here, boys and girls mix, and there's so many abominable things. It becomes very distressful, and it binds them with material bondage. That's friendship between boy and girl. But Krishna had so many girl gopis, so many girlfriends. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada said, there was no contraceptive pills. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said, that is the beauty. Here the so-called love is lust. And there, that thing is the highest. Here the same thing which is perverted, it's a reflection of the highest, topmost love, parakya. Parakya means love, not by marriage life, but by friendship. Here, it's considered to be very perverted. It's the lowest thing. It's very abominable. It's adultery. It's not allowed by society, not allowed by the state. But the tendency is there, even if one is married, they want to love another person's wife. Or if the girl is married, she wants to love another husband. Why? That nature is there. And it's also there in Radha and Krishna. I'd like to also read you a short conversation Prabhupada had with a devotee that I was just with not so long ago. He came to the Govardhan Palace for Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day. And his legal name is Bob Cohen. You may have heard of him before. He's a famous person in a book called Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. And so he told us some interesting things. He said that when he, in 1972, when he went to Mayapur, he met with Srila Prabhupada, and he wasn't a devotee. He was a Peace Corps worker. He was a little interested in Krishna consciousness. And he told us, he said, I went there, and there was like 200 fanatical brahmacharis and Hare Krishna preachers. And I was all by myself. I was the only person all of them could preach to. He said, the only way that I survived is Srila Prabhupada protected me. Prabhupada told him, you come to my house. Prabhupada had his hut there, and he was bringing him there every day and keeping him away from the devotees. Otherwise, he told me, he said, I never would have joined. So there's one conversation he had with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was explaining how Krishna is the best of everything and how Krishna is attractive to everyone. And Bob Cohen, who later became Brahmatirtha Prabhu, Bob Cohen asked Srila Prabhupada, is Krishna attractive to rascals? And Prabhupada said, yes. Krishna was the greatest rascal also. Bob Cohen, he's just this new person. Really? How is that? And Prabhupada started laughing. He said, because he was always teasing the girls. Shamasundar Prabhu was there, and he also became confused. He said, Prabhupada, he was teasing them? Prabhupada said, yes. He said, Radharani wouldn't go there to Krishna because she was married. But Krishna, Prabhupada says, Krishna would attack her. And she would fall down and say, Krishna, don't torture me in that way. And then when Krishna knocked her down, Prabhupada said, Krishna would take the opportunity and he would kiss her. Prabhupada said, the Bab Kohan Prabhu. So internally, he says, Radharani was very pleased. But externally, Krishna was the greatest rascal. Prabhupada said, unless rascaldom is there in Krishna, how can it exist in this world? Because God, Krishna, he's the source of everything. So if rascaldom is not there in Krishna, how can it be manifest? He's the source of everything. But his rascaldom is so nice that everyone worships his rascaldom. So in this regard, we'd like to speak something at this place about Bichua. Bichua means the toe ring. Bichua means the wedding ring. And how it is that Radharani, she's wearing a wedding ring? How is it that Radharani seems to have such a difficult time in her life? She's suffering so much, having to marry this Abhimanyu. I told the devotees, some of the devotees who are going today to Javad, I said, you be careful. There's one fellow there, he likes to marry all the girls. His name's Abhimanyu. Don't let him marry you when you go there. This Abhimanyu was married to Srimati Radharani. So how can we understand that? My Guru Maharaj used to speak about this in a very interesting way. He said there's different types of priti. This is a little technical. Just fasten your safety belt. We'll have some stories in a minute. But first we have some foundation of philosophy. There's two types of general divisions of priti or love. Patitva and Ramatva. Patitva means that love of the married lady to the husband. Lakshmi Devi, she loves Lord Narayan because he's her husband. And the Mahishis, the queens of Dwarka, they love Krishna because he's their husband. Sita, she also has a Patitva relationship. She sees Lord Ramachandra as her pati, her husband. But there's another type of relationship which is Ramatva. Ram means the giver of pleasure, where they simply want to give pleasure to Krishna. And that is known as Parakya. There's Swakya and there's Parakya. Swakya is married love. Parakya love, Parakya is married love, and Swakya is married love, and Parakya is when the lover is married to someone else. So that type of love is Ramatva. He's not married to me. They don't love him just because he's their husband. They just want to bring pleasure to him. So they worship him as a pati or the upapati. Pati means the husband. Upapati means the consort or the beloved. One type of love is sopadika priti. It's so upadika. It's with upadis, with designations. I love him because he's my husband. That's why we love him. Why do we like Gurudev? Because he's my Gurudev. He must be the best. He gave me initiation. It's really a kind of selfishness. That's sopadika priti. Love with a reason, with a designation. But the gopi's love is nirupadika priti. It has no upadi, no designation. They're not married to Krishna. One type of love is hoitaki priti. It's love with a cause, because they're married. But the other is ahoitaki priti, love without any cause. So Srimati Radharani, she lives at Javad, the place the other devotees are going today, and maybe they're going to have some very similar katha to what we're having today, I don't know. There's some solidarity, I think, in the Govardhan retreat, anyway. And there in that place, you'll find that the man in charge there, his name was Bricka, and he had a wife. His wife's name was Jatila, and he had a daughter named Kutila, and a son named Abhimanyu. The word Bricka is interesting. All of these names are very interesting. The word Bricka means a wolf, or it means a dog. means a jackal. It also means a crow. It also means a thunderbolt. So Bricka, he's the father-in-law of Srimati Radharani. Radharani's married to this Abhimanyu. She had her toe ring, which she lost here in this place, her married toe ring. And that father-in-law, Bricka, is like a thunderbolt for Radharani. Bricka has another name also. His other name is Gola. And Gola, it's not a very nice thing to call someone. Gola is a word for a widow's bastard, bastard child. So if a woman who was married, her husband dies, she becomes a widow. Later on, she has a bastard child, very, very low class. That's called Gola. So Bricka, the husband of Jatili, he's called Gola. Gola means a widow's bastard or a woman's friend. So his wife was Jatila. That's such a nice name, Jatila. What does Jatila mean? You look in the Sanskrit dictionary, it means someone who has a hairy face. You ever see a woman with a mustache, you know? And it has other meanings also. Jatila means hairy face. It means dreadlocks. It's also a word for a goat. Jatila is kind of like a goat. She's married to a dog, her husband Bricka. And Jatila also means a kind of chili pepper. It's very, very hot and spicy. That's Jatila. So they have a daughter. And their daughter is Kutila. Kutila means something very crooked and bent. It means dishonest or fraudulent. And it also is a word for a he-goat. That's Kutila. And Jatila and Kutila were always causing trouble to Srimati Radharani. So now this is a very curious thing. How is it that Srimati Radharani got put in such a situation? And at this point I'd like to introduce another concept. What relevance does it have to us? Because I don't like just to sit and tell you some entertaining stories. But we should think about things in a deep way and understand what relevance does this have to me. We'll come to that at the end. But we can be thinking about it. Some time back when we were speaking about literature, there is a section of the Uttara Kanda, the second half of the Brahmanda Purana. And that section is called Radha Hridaya. And it said that it was spoken by Lord Brahma to some of the rishis. And there's one chapter, 8, which has 119 verses. It's called Sanat Kumarera Goloka Prati Abhishap Akyana. The story of how Sanat Kumar, the famous rishi, cursed the entire realm of Goloka. Very interesting thing. So Lord Brahma, he narrated this story to the devotees, the rishis. On one occasion, Sanat Kumar, he came to Goloka Vrindavan. And when he arrived there, he came there with about 500 disciples. Kind of like a lot of ISKCON gurus. They go places, we have so many disciples and things. So Sanat Kumar is like that. And he and all of his disciples were very ferocious, very, very intense personalities. Already, the four Kumaras, they cursed Jayan Vijay when they went to the spiritual world because they wouldn't let them inside. It's a little bit of an angry sadhu, angry person. So they went there and they demanded the chokidars, let us inside. We want to see Radha and Krishna. But they told them, because at that time Radha and Krishna were doing Rasleela. And the chokidars, the gatekeepers, said, Krishna can't come right now. He can come in a little while. You should just wait. Sanat Kumar, he could understand by his yogic power. And we can understand because Krishna is Yogeshwar, he's the source of all mystic power, that Krishna actually gave him this realization, this understanding. But by his mystic power, Sanat Kumar could understand, oh, he's lying to me. Radha and Krishna are actually just on the other side of the door. They're doing something. And he's not letting me in. So Sanat Kumar insisted, hey, you let me in. But the gatekeepers, they said, no, no, no. And they put sticks in front of him. You can't come in. So Sanat Kumar then became very angry. And he said, I curse you. And I curse this entire realm of Goloka Vrindavan, that you're all going to have to come to the material world. And then he stormed off with his disciples in a very angry way. And so at that time, all of Goloka Vrindavan started trembling, shaking, and different inauspicious symptoms came. They're in the spiritual world, the place where there's nothing inauspicious, everything is auspicious. And all the residents, they came to Krishna and they begged him, please, please. And Krishna assured them, he said, you don't worry. The Hridaya, Radha Hridaya section of the Brahmananda Purana says that Krishna told them that you go and you do Nam Kirtan. And by doing Nam Kirtan, everything will be okay. And eventually you return to Goloka Vrindavan. Previous to this, and this is told in different ways in different Puranas, Sridham, Radharani's elder brother, he cursed Radharani. There was some quarrel between the two of them. And Sridham cursed Radharani that you'll have to marry someone other than Krishna. A very heavy curse. So all of Goloka Vrindavan came to the material world. And also Srimati Radharani came. And everyone took birth in different Kshatriya and Vaishya dynasties. There were thousands of gopas and gopis who appeared in Gokul, and Srimati Radharani became the daughter of Kirtida. After Brishabhanu Maharaj received the blessing of who? Mother Jagatarini is speaking about it, goddess Kadyayani. By the blessing of Kadyayani Devi, they received a daughter known as Srimati Radharani. And at the same time, Jatila and Brika, they had a son, and his name was Ayan Ghosh, also known as Abhimanyu. And he was an angsa, or a portion, of Krishna. And it's described in the next chapter that Srimati Radharani, one day her parents came to her and they said, hey Radhe, you're getting old. Girls used to get married a little earlier here in India. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's first wife, I think she was 5 or 6 years old when they got married. They probably wouldn't let you do that in Czech. I don't think. But Srimati Radharani was getting a little older. Maybe she was 10 years old or something, maybe 12. It's like really, really old. And Brishabhanu Maharaj and Kirtida, they made some arrangement. They told Radharani, very good news, you're going to get married. Radharani was horrified because she just wanted to be with Krishna. And he said, no, no, don't worry. We have a very good husband for you. His name is Abhimanyu. And he's the son of Brika and Jatila. Radharani was feeling very, very disturbed and very, very unhappy. You see, Brishabhanu Maharaj, when he saw the growing beauty of Radha, he sent messages all over Braj to try to find a suitable husband for her. And none of them were successful. And then the sage Sanak told Brishabhanu that there was one unmarried boy in the town of Kosol, whose name was Ayan Ghosh. And he was the son of Jatila, and he would be a very good husband for your daughter. So Brishabhanu Maharaj sent some invitation to Ayan Ghosh to marry him. When Radharani heard about that, she became full of anxiety, and she recalled previously how she was cursed to marry a mortal human being. And so then she went with her sakis to the bank of the Jamuna to perform. What did she perform? Katyayani Vrata. To worship Katyayani Devi for the benediction of getting, who is her husband?
Krishna.
So she was fasting and doing different austerities. And eventually Krishna appeared before her and told her, don't do this penance. What are you doing? What benediction do you want? And Radharani, she told him that unless you marry me, I'm going to tie a big rock around my neck and I'm going to jump into the Jamuna and drown myself. She was crying. And Krishna took her in his lap and he said, don't worry. This fellow, Ayan Ghosh, he's my plenary portion. You don't have any fear. But still, Radharani, she was not happy. She was concerned. She was very, very nervous. So Krishna said, look, in this context, Ayan Ghosh is Krishna's uncle. He's related to Krishna on Krishna's mother's side, Yashoda's side. And Krishna told Radharani that I'll go to Ayan Ghosh. You don't worry. I'll take care of everything. And everybody will think that you're going to marry Ayan Ghosh, but in reality, you're going to marry me. And then Radharani still didn't look so happy. So Krishna said, look, I'll give you another benediction. Okay? Whenever anybody says our names, right, your name will come first before my name. And in the Narada Pancharatra, it said that whenever we say the names of Radha Madhav, we always say Radharani's name first. We say Radha Krishna, we always say Radharani's name first. And the Narada Pancharatra says, if you do the opposite, viparitam, it says the opposite, then brahmahatya, you'll get the result of killing a Brahmin if you say Krishna's name before Radha's. I don't know exactly how that works, but that's what it says. I can show you the verse later if you like. And then the next verse explains why. That Jagannatha Radhika, that Srimati Radharani is the mother of the universe, and Krishna is the father, and the mother is 100 times more worshipable and due respect than the father. We have to just push that in a little bit for the ladies, yes? So Krishna gave her that benediction, and he said that whoever does it the other way, they're going to get some very sinful result. And then Krishna disappeared. So then everybody, Vrishabhanu Maharaj, he started making arrangements for the marriage, and he sent out news everywhere, all over Braj. And so many guests were coming from all over Braj. And they ornamented the entire town. Srimati Radharani appeared where? Where? Rubble. Many times devotees, they say, Barshana. Do you know what the name rubble comes from? There's a nice book written not far from here, Govinda Kund, called Vaidagya Vilas. And in Vaidagya Vilas, it explains why the town is called rubble. Because when Vrishabhanu Maharaj had a daughter, they named her Radha. Such a nice name. And he came out, all the villagers were there, very excited. Vrishabhanu Maharaj finally had a daughter. What's her name? What's her name? What's her name? And he came out and he told him, her name is Radha. And all the villagers, when they heard the two syllables, Radha, they became so ecstatic. And they all started repeating the name of Radha. But it was such an ecstatic name, they couldn't repeat the whole name. They just said the first syllable, Ra, Ra Bull. And they became so ecstatic they couldn't finish it. So that place where all they could say, bol means to say, was Ra, became known as rubble. Ra bol. And that's where Srimati Radharani appeared. So they invited everyone to come for the wedding. Leader Maharaj Vrishabhanu, they shifted to Barsana. And so many, many different guests came. And they fed everyone very sumptuously, and everyone was laughing and singing and dancing. And then there was the Varanagamana Pastava, the next chapter, 15, which is a ritual procession of the groom. And Ayan Ghosh, he invited so many guests, you come in the procession, We see this even in India today. There used to be, I sometimes even today in Orissa, I see the wedding ceremonies, they have the procession, and sometimes they're playing shanais and drums, and it's so sweet and nice. We like it very much. What to speak if it's a Vaishnava marriage, you'll see them doing kirtan. But nowadays they have something else, and the ground is shaking for about 2 kilometers from distance because of the speakers, and they're playing some kind of rock and roll or something, and all the guests are drunk, and they're all dancing, and it's something like I'm not too enthusiastic about. Anyway, so Iyengar Ghosh, they had a procession, and he was riding in a chariot, and he sent invitations to Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, all the important persons, and they also brought along Krishna and Balaram. And all the different Brahmins were there, they were doing the pujas for auspiciousness, and the procession began. Then Iyengar Ghosh, he climbed on the palanquin at an auspicious time, and there's so many decorated soldiers in front of him and so many cowherd boys behind him, and all the cowherd boys were doing what? What do cowherd boys do? They talk and they joke. Those cowherd boys. And so there's so much singing and dancing, everybody in the street. And they arrived at Bishop Bhanu Maharaj's palace, and they sent some messenger there, and Bishop Bhanu Maharaj came out to greet the visitors. And all the girls came into the windows of the palace, and they were looking at the window to see what does the groom look like. Who is this fellow who's going to marry our Radha? Going to marry my friend Radharani? And so, meanwhile, this whole time, during the procession, because everybody, all the friends and relatives come in the procession, so Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda also came in the procession, Balaram also came in the procession, and Krishna came in the procession. And Krishna, he said, Ayan, you're my uncle. I want to ride in your lap. And so Krishna called up top, and he sat down in Iyengar Ghosh's lap. And something happened by his mystic power. I'm a little shy in this mixed company of ladies and gentlemen to tell you what happened, but it's important. When Krishna sat down in his lap, something happened to Iyengar Ghosh, which was very embarrassing. His male paraphernalia, it disappeared when Krishna sat down in his lap. Okay. So when that procession arrived at Maharaj Bishop Bhanu's palace, Krishna's been riding in the lap of Iyengar Ghosh. And because he promised Radharani that she would marry Krishna instead of Iyengar Ghosh. And so Krishna sat there on the lap of the groom. Now, in different parts of India, there are different traditions. Sometimes, and I mostly hear this from either Indian devotees who really don't know so much about Indian culture, but they're very enthusiastic, especially sometimes they don't like Muslims or Christians or anybody except for Hindus. Or this is also a common kind of thing amongst Western devotees who also don't know so much about Western culture. They say, we should be Vedic. Prabhu, we should be Vedic. You should be Vedic. Exactly what that Vedic is, I'm not really very sure. Because it can mean so many things. I'll give you a couple of examples. This is a side note. Vedic in South India, I've seen some villages, you see, you know they're coming from a certain village because when they go to the train station with their bags, the ladies are carrying the bags on their head and their arms, and the husband's just walking freely while the lady's carrying all the bags. That's very good Vedic culture. I like that. In South India, in Gujarat, the ladies, they cover their heads, right? But in South India, if the ladies cover their heads, their mother will say, is there something wrong? Because the ladies in South India don't cover their heads only if they did something embarrassing. They made some mistake or something, then they cover their head. So in some parts of the India, the ladies wear saris. In South India, the ladies wear very long saris, and they tie them like a dhoti with a kachcha. A tail on the back, that's Vedic. In Orissa, in some of the villages, it's very popular, some of the brahmacharis, Hare Krishna, the ladies don't wear cholis. They don't wear anything on the top. That's Vedic culture. You can't do that in Zurich or Moscow. But that's Vedic culture. In Barsana, they have a very interesting Vedic tradition amongst the traditional Vaishnavi ladies of Braj. The Barsana ladies, every year they have a tradition where on the day of Holi, they throw colors. And on that day, the men come from Nandagaon, and they have an interesting thing. They wear these kind of helmets made out of turtle shells with some cushioning underneath, because all the very chaste, submissive, nice Vedic ladies, they take these big luttis, these big sticks, and they beat the hell out of the men. Good. You like this, Mataji? You tell your husband, Prabhuji, we're going to be Vedic now. That's Vedic. It's also Vedic in Manipur. In Manipur, some very Vedic, chaste, traditional Vedic ladies, you know what they do? They've gotten together in a little group. They're not doing bhajans every night, but what they do, they patrol the streets like the police. And if they find any young men who are drinking or behaving in very bad ways with the ladies, they take sticks and they beat him. Then they tie him up with ropes and they drag him to the streets. That's the Vedic culture there. Isn't it, Manuji? The Vedic culture can mean so many different things. So in this particular Vedic culture here in Braj, when Ayan Ghosh arrived on the palanquin, the groom arrived with the procession, the tradition at that time, in that place, the bride would come and she would take his hand. Usually in Bengali marriage, it's called panigrahana, when the husband takes the wife's hand. And there's a whole ceremony for that. You tie their wrists together. It's very romantic. And that's an important part of the marriage ceremony. It happens later. But here in Braj, at that time, the first thing, when the husband comes in the palanquin, he reaches down his hand and he takes the hand of the bride. And that's the first symptom of their marriage. So Ayan Ghosh arrived in his palanquin. And who was sitting on his lap? Krishna. And by his yogamaya potency, he kind of made Ayan Ghosh's head a little fuzzy, a little dizzy, so he didn't really understand what was going on. Krishna reached down. And Krishna took the hand of Srimati Radharani, because Krishna promised her, I'll marry you, not this Ayan Ghosh's Abhimanyu fellow. So in this way, Srimati Radharani actually married Krishna, because Ayan Ghosh is the shadow of Krishna, sometimes it's said, the angsa, the expansion of Krishna. And yes, Ayan Ghosh is with Radharani, but Ayan Ghosh, after their marriage ceremony, they're supposed to have a honeymoon. Ayan Ghosh was a little embarrassed. He said, well, I don't think I'm going to go tonight. It's okay. Because he lost his equipment. Sorry, I don't know how else to put that. So he never ever touched Srimati Radharani. So we should understand something about this. In the Ujjal Nilamani, Rupa Goswami, in the 9th chapter, text 41, he says a very interesting thing. Hari Priya Jane Bhava Dvaisadya No Chita Iti Yevya Haranti Te Gaya Apurva Rasikakshito. Persons who don't understand the nature of transcendental mellows in this world, they're materialistic people. They think that, oh, negative emotions like hatred and envy, those are improper amongst devotees of Krishna. Rupa Goswami says, they're not very rasik. They don't really understand the nature of rasa. If they try to say there's no envy, there's no anger or anything, they're in Braj. And he goes on to say, Samohana Shikandarpa Brindebhyo Pyaga Vidvisha Murto Narma Priya Saka Shringaro Vartite Braje Kshipin Mito Vijatiya Bhavayo Esha Pakshayo Ishadin Swa Parivarin Yogi swa preshta tushtaye ata evahi vislishye snehastasham prakasate. In Braj, the mellow of conjugal love is a submissive and dear friend of Krishna. Krishna, who's more charming than millions of cupids. And when Krishna is present, the mellow of conjugal love, that mellow of divine love, the manifestation of divine love in the form of Madhurja Ras, here in Braj for Krishna, when it manifests in the presence of Krishna, it incites, Rupa Goswami says, negative emotions such as hatred and jealousy between two camps of rival gopis in order to please Krishna. And when Krishna is not present, these negative emotions are aroused in order to increase the gopis' love for him. So, Jiva Goswami describes in Pratisandarbha a similar thing. Teshamapi yat sabhavadinaiva chagantukad anyagyatnat naso prittir vyabhicharati pratyutatad eva tiraskaroti. The divine love that the people of Braj experience for Krishna is the crest jewel of all love in all the three worlds. The nature of that love is that when opposing things appear, that love doesn't waver. Srimati Radharani is in a very difficult situation. She's married to Abhimanyu, and Jatila and Kutila are always there. There's a story maybe Mother Jagatarni is telling right now, I don't know. There in Javad, a story about Javad, how many stories how Krishna used to come to see Radharani. And then one, and sometimes this Kutila, she was very, very envious, and she was always criticizing Radharani and telling Jatila that Radharani, she's being unchaste to Abhimanyu, she's going and seeing this black snake Krishna. But she never had any evidence. And Kutila is a little bent in more ways than one. She's a crooked person. And nobody really took her very seriously. But she was always trying to tell them, listen to me. Yeah, you're always saying that. No, really. Radharani's going with that Krishna. No, she's chased Abhimanyu. So one day, Kutila was there in Javad. And as she's walking, she went past a go-down little building. And she heard a male voice and a female voice. And Kutila, she's like a spy, KGB. She came over and she was peeking through the window and to the door, and she saw Radharani alone with Krishna. She said, ha ha, now I've got you. And Kutila slammed the door shut and she locked it from the outside. And she ran really fast. She's a little fat. Her mother's really fat, Rupa Goswami says. Jatila has a very big belly. And it says Jatila is the color of a crow. Abhimanyu's mother. Anyway. So she ran to Jatila and Abhimanyu. I told you about this Radharani and how she's going with Krishna. Now I've caught them. Come and see. Everybody's saying, Kutila, you told us something. No. With this time for real. I've captured them. I locked them up in the room. Come. All right. So they all came there. And Kutila was very pleased with herself. Everyone's been making fun of me, not believing what I have to say, my criticism about Radharani, but now I have proof. And so she came to the go-down. The door is locked on the outside still. No way for Radha and Krishna to get out. And she opened the door. She swung the door open. And she pointed, see? And everyone was looking, and they said, so? So what? And then Kutila became very nervous, not again. I don't want to look like a fool again. And she looked inside, and she saw Radharani was on her knees, and she was praying to a black deity of Kali. And she was praying to that deity, oh, please bless my husband Abhimanyu. May he have a long life. And Kutila was very confused, and everybody started laughing at her. Kutila, you crazy person. So this kind of thing is always going on. Radha and Krishna are always getting some opposition. The gopis are always getting opposition. But the nature of the love of Braj, where the more opposition is there, that love defeats the opposition. It says rather, pratyutatat eva tiraskaroti, when that obstacles come, the love increases. It increases the love. It doesn't decrease the love. So this is a very important thought for all of us. Taking a thought from Bhaktivinod Thakur's Krishna Sanghita and Chaitanya Sikshamrita, where he describes that the nimittic leelas, or the occasional pastimes of Krishna that go on in Braj, are also full of instructions for the sadhak devotees in this material world. He doesn't speak directly about the marriage of Radha, but taking that spirit of his examination, we can also look for some, we can find some lesson for ourselves. The Srimati Radharani has so much difficulties. Mataji, you think it's difficult being married to Leela Purushottam. You're always complaining. She doesn't complain, actually. But he's always late. I know. Very difficult person. You think it, but you don't know how difficult it is for Radharani to be married to Abhimanyu and have Jatila and Kutila there with her all the time, chastising her, criticizing her. It's so very, very difficult. One story is there that Radharani had made arrangements, Radha Krishna had made agreed, they're going to meet in a particular kunj one night. And so Radharani is very excited, she's cooking everything for Krishna, and she's getting ready to go for the abhisar, the meeting with Krishna. And it's a little late, maybe 11 o'clock at night, and then all of a sudden Abhimanyu, her husband, returned home. And Jatila came into Radharani, "Hey, Radharani, your husband just came from a journey and he has his friend Govardhan Mullak with him. You have to cook for them, make some feast for them." So Radharani, she can't go to see Krishna because Jatila is keeping her back. So these kind of things happen sometimes. So similarly, Jiva Goswami describes in Anucheta 93 of the Paramatma Sandarbha, there's also suffering for devotees. Just as Radharani has to suffer, he says that dukkanubhava nama hyantakarane dukkasparsha, that suffering, it touches the heart. And because it touches the heart, you can understand someone else's suffering. Isn't it, Prabhuji? When we have some suffering, everyone criticizes us. "Oh, they're very, very bad. Nonsense people. We don't like them. All of our friends leave us. Even the devotees leave us, and we feel very sad and very hurt." That suffering touches our heart, and it does something to our heart, so that we can understand then the suffering of other persons. And Jiva Goswami, he says a very beautiful thing. This is one of my favorite statements in Paramatma Sandarbha. Please listen carefully. "Yet tu bhaktanam sukham," the happiness of the devotees, "tapasya bhakti rupameva," the devotees become happy by bhakti. Bhakti brings great happiness to devotees, isn't it? That's why you're here. There's more happiness here in Govardhan than there is in Moscow. Yes? I think so. There's so much happiness at the Govardhan retreat. Devotees get so much happiness. He says, "Tata tesham dukam cha." What is the cause of dukkha? The cause of unhappiness. "Tata tesham dukam cha bhagavat prapt antarayanaiva bhavati." When you can't go to the Govardhan retreat. When Gurudev comes and you haven't had his darshan, you haven't seen Guru Maharaj in 1 year, 2 years, and he comes, but you just broke your leg and you're stuck in the hospital and you can't go to any of the programs, you can't do anything. Jiva Goswami says this is the cause of suffering for devotees. Happiness is bhakti, and suffering is when we can't fulfill that bhakti. He says, but something happens when the devotee is not able to go to see Gurudev, when the devotee is not able to go to Mangal Arati because they're sick, when they can't go to the Govardhan retreat because they don't have enough money for a ticket, or whatever thing it is that's causing them unhappiness, then bhakti. If they persevere and they continue, anyway, this is due to my fault, due to my sinful nature, there's some difficulty for me in my bhakti because of myself, because of wrong things I've done, but I'm not going to give up. I'm never going to stop my determination for bhakti, to serve Gurudev, to be with the devotees, to do kirtan. Then Jiva Goswami says, something happens. What is that? Something very mystical. Tatcha charika bhagavateva chittadrita jayate sa cha bhaktir eva ti. Chittadrita jayate means the heart melts. Whose heart? Krishna's heart. When Krishna sees that the devotee is in such a difficult situation, Radharani is in such a difficult situation. When Krishna sees a devotee in such a difficult situation, but in spite of the difficulties, the devotee won't give up. He won't give up their devotion. They insist on going on. Then Krishna's heart melts. Bhagavat eva chittadrita jayate sa cha bhaktir eva ti. And when Krishna's heart melts, what happens? That becomes bhakti. That's our blessing. So all these obstacles are actually blessings in disguise. And if we complain about them, then we may be missing the opportunity to advance, just like in school. When you have a test, you may think, I don't like this test. I like school very much. I get to talk to the pretty girls, and I play games while the teacher's talking. Class, school is very fun, but I don't like tests. But if you don't pass the test, then you can't progress to the next grade. And an interesting thing is there about tests in school. During the test, the teacher is always quiet. During Krishna's test, during the test of Gurudev, Gurudev and Krishna are also quiet. And they're watching you. What are they going to do now? Very, very difficult situation. They married someone. They thought that he was like Ramachandra, but he turned out to be like Ravan. Such a husband, very, very difficult life. How am I going to go on? How can I can't chant anymore because my husband's so difficult, my wife is so difficult. But if in spite of all those difficulties, Prabhupada told the story of his sister Bhavatarini, we call Pishima. She got married, her parents married her to a young boy who was not a vegetarian. And moreover, he was an alcoholic, drinking, and he was a meat eater, and he was a womanizer, always going after different women. When Bhavatarini, Prabhupada's sister, who was a great devotee from her birth, Prabhupada said, we used to play kites on the roof, and she would start chanting Hare Krishna, and because she was chanting Hare Krishna, her kite would go higher than my kite. Prabhupada said like that, and she would defeat me, she would be very, very happy. Bhavatarini was such a great devotee. So when she first went to her husband's house, she saw they were cooking meat, and she started crying. And her husband's mother came to her, and she said, what's wrong? Bhavatarini said, I've never eaten this kind of thing in my whole life. I've never done this. And her husband's mother said, don't worry about it. I'll get you some separate pots. We'll make sure you have something you can cook for yourself. You don't have to take like this. And so she never compromised her principles. She was always very, very determined. And Prabhupada said once that she made her husband a devotee. Even though her husband was such a rascal, she was so, and I'm not necessarily advocating that women get abused and stay with somebody, but she changed the heart of her husband and made him into a devotee. So this is the point that Jiva Goswami makes here, that if we don't give up, if we're determined in our devotion, if we go on, then Krishna's going to bless us. And that thing which seemed like a great obstacle, it might actually turn out to be something positive. How many of you here would like to associate with Ramachandra Puri? You know who Ramachandra Puri is? Ramachandra Puri was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Ishwara Puri and Madhavendra Puri, he had two special disciples, many disciples. Advaitacharya was one of his disciples. Madhavi Devi was a grand disciple, I guess. But Ishwara Puri and Ramachandra Puri were two prominent disciples of Madhavendra Puri. And they had very different natures. Ramachandra Puri liked to criticize everyone. And even he was criticizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He went to Mahaprabhu's place. Hey, look, pinpuris. Pinpuri in a real language means ants. There's ants on the ground. Proof, he's been eating sweets. And he's supposed to be a sannyasi. But hey, Baba, in Orissa, in Puri, there's ants everywhere. But he's such a fault finder. He was always criticizing all the devotees, always causing all kinds of troubles. He would call the devotee and say, you should take, he would come to someone's house and say, today is your lucky day. They say, well, what? I'm here. I'm going to bless you. And I'm a sannyasi. It's your lucky day. You can feed me. More paneer, please. And he would take lots and lots of prasadam, huge amounts of prasadam. They were surprised how one person could eat so much. And then Ramachandrapuri would tell them, now you have to eat. They would say, I'll eat later. No, no, no. You eat. I'll take something later. No, sit down. I'm your superior. Okay. So they sit down, and then Ramachandrapuri would start giving them so much prasadam. And they would say, that's enough. Like, no, no, you should take more. Don't be falsely renounced. Take more. I can't eat more. Take more. Right. So he would give them so much prasadam. And then he would say, ha, just see, I heard the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were overeating. Just see. So later on, the devotees, one devotee came running into the assembly devotees one day, and he said, have you heard the wonderful news? Ramachandrapuri has exhibited his opulence of renunciation, and he's left Jagannath Puri. Haribo! And everyone had a big festival. We don't appreciate Ramachandrapuri because he's a critic, but do you know that Ramachandrapuri, according to Kavi Karnapur and Gaura Ganadesh Deepika, that Ramachandrapuri is actually an eternal associate of Radha and Krishna in Braj. And his name is Jatila. So obstacles and critics are not always what they look like. Okay? We'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ke, Sri Bhikshu Kunda ki, Sri Keshava Charja ki, Sri Harideva ki, Bolo Giriraj Maharaja ke, Kor Premanande, Vamcha Kalpada Rubhishcha, Kupa Sindhu Bhyevacha, Patita Nam Pavane Bhyo, Vaishnava Bhyo Namo Namaha. Before we go any further, I would like to humbly request Sachinanda Maharaj has any comments or anything, Maharaj? You want to add anything? Everybody would be very, very happy, and they'll probably, maybe they would forgive me for the offense of Marita Vyati Kram speaking in front of you, Maharaj.
I am asking, think for a moment.
Okay.
So, absorbing everything, my mind is.
So Maharaj might make some comment in the morning. But are there any other comments or thoughts from anybody else? We like reflections. Reflections are useful because a reflection means, oh, you said something, I really liked it. And you repeat it. And by repeating it, it sticks to your gut more. You can keep it. Or you can maybe another kind of reflection is, you said this and it reminded me of this other thing over here. And that's very good. So does anybody, before questions, does anybody have any reflections? It's very encouraging for me. It means I know at least one or two people weren't asleep during the talk. Prabhuji?
I've heard that Krishna grows faster than his age, like 4 or 5 years ahead of time. Is that same applicable to Radharani also?
This is an interesting question. I've seen different descriptions in different Goswami literatures and different Vedic literatures, like in the Gita Govinda, it describes that Radharani is older than Krishna. But Rupa Goswami in Radha Krishna Ganesh Deepika says something different. My humble understanding is that Radha and Krishna's ages vary sometimes according to the Leelas in Braj. And at different times, when they manifest different pastimes, their age may be a little different. For example, Rupa Goswami says a very interesting thing, that little Krishna, and he's like 2 years old, maybe less, like one and a half, something, just a little baby. The elderly gopis came, and they were complaining to Mother Yashoda, Yashoda, your Gopal, he was stealing makkhan. Mother Yashoda, she turned to her little boy, Gopal, did you steal makkhan? Gopal said, yes. How much makan did you steal? And then that little boy, he's 1.5 years old. This is a little, please excuse me for saying something, a little racy, we would say in America. But that little 1.5-year-old Krishna, what did he do then? He reached over with his little hand and he grabbed the breast of Dhanishta Gopi. And he grabbed her breast and he said, this much. He's a little boy. But even though he's 1.5 years old already, he's exhibiting some symptoms of Madhurja Ras. So Krishna, he's Navayovana, he's always youthful, but he manifests different ages at different times. That's the only thing I could say to that. Maybe some other Vaishnavas here could give a better comment. I don't know. Any other reflections, especially other than comments, other than questions? Can you speak loudly, Prabhuji? Very good question. Jamuna Prasadji wants to give everyone prasad. But first of all, just a couple of comments. So, very interesting thing in the book Vaidagya Vilas, it says that actually Jatila was also a devotee of Krishna. And although Jatila was always criticizing Krishna, Rupa Goswami says in Lita Madhav that once Jatila came when Krishna was with the other gopis and she started chastising him. Hey, you black snake, you stay away from my daughter-in-law. And Krishna turned and said, hey, fat lips, what are you doing? He spoke to her in a way like that. And then Krishna turned to Madhu Mangala. He said, you know, I get more pleasure from the harsh words of these old ladies of Braj than I get from the prayers of the personified Vedas. It's sweeter. There's some rasa there. Jatila performs a very nice function. There's a nice story that on one occasion, Krishna came to the house of Jatila. He wanted to see Srimati Radharani. But somehow Jatila didn't understand that. She saw Krishna. Radharani was angry with Krishna. She wouldn't see Krishna. Krishna had gone with Chandravali, some other gopi. And when Krishna came to Jatila's house, Jatila said, huh, what do you want here? He said, oh Ma, I'm just coming. I was looking for a calf. And then when Jatila saw the form of Krishna, her heart melted. And she had some love for Krishna. She said, you should stay here for a little bit and milk one of our cows. So Krishna milked the cow. And then Jatila said, no, you should stay a little longer. Krishna said, then I'll go now. No, you stay a little longer. You should drink some of the milk. Krishna was drinking from the cup. And then Jatila started calling, Radharani, you come. We have a guest. You should also serve the guest. And then somehow by yoga maya, Jatila was a little covered over. And she took Krishna's cup of milk with his remnants. And she told Radharani, here, you should drink some milk also. And she gave Krishna's remnants. Jatila personally gave Krishna's remnants to Radharani. And what happened, Radharani, she's a little angry. She's angry with Krishna. She doesn't want to take his remnants or anything. Jatila's saying, don't be shy. You take the milk. So Radharani drank that milk. And all of her sulkiness, all of her anger went away. And Krishna had a big smile on his face. Well, there's many stories. Jatila's actually, everyone in Braj is a great devotee of Krishna. Sometimes demons are allowed to come into Braj. And there's different descriptions in books like Brahma Vaivarta Purana and in Garga Sanhita. We spoke something about Garga Sanhita a few days ago and how it's not always what we always think. Anyway, how some of those demons were actually devotees in previous lives who may have made some mistake, they got cursed or whatever, and then therefore they were able to enter into Braj, they were able to have darshan of Krishna. They're not ordinary personalities. So, like that. Anything else is there? The comments or questions. So Chinan, do you want to say anything? Maharaj, you know, I also So I have a question for everybody here. I don't want to offend the devotees. Would everybody be okay if Suchinanda Maharaj did some kirtan? Suchinanda Maharaj, okay! But we have to have some Hindi-speaking devotee speak to Jamuna Prasadji. What comes first, the kirtan or the prasad?
Kirtan. He was starting to distribute prasad, but then I told him that after the lecture, after the lecture, okay, then he could distribute.
Okay, so you just explained to him.
After the kirtan.
Okay. Maharaj, you want to do kirtan now?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so we'll have a little kirtan, and then we'll have a little prasadam.